Hardly, Verona agreed. We've also managed to recover a handful of artifacts and relics from the ruin, I said, glancing between Aldwyn and Stanton. I think I'll be able to salvage or recreate some of it, but the ley line has to be our priority for the time being.
I absolutely agree, Stanton said with a nod. But in the meantime, would it be possible to have your permission to send Samuel and Quincy into the rune? The information that we could uncover is beyond priceless. It could redefine all study of the Nefar.
At least he knows how to ask politely, I thought as I shifted my gaze towards Aldwyn, seeing him give me a nearly imperceptible shrug in return. I wasn't anywhere close to trusting Stanton at this point, yet given the seriousness of the situation, I couldn't see what there was to gain from denying him access to the ruin. The more we discovered about the Nefar and their technology, the better prepared we would be when it came to deal with a ley line. But still, it pays to be cautious.
You can, I stated after a moment of thought. But I want a copy of all your research, and Halcyon, Caius, and Donovan will be in charge. Anything they say goes. That is more than fair, Stanton said in a surprisingly gracious manner. I will be sure to impress upon Samuel and Quincy that we are guests.
And how are you exactly going to tell them that? Lazarus asked. Everyone knows about the last time you and Lyrian met in public. Aren't you concerned your cover is going to slip?
Given the nature of our discovery, I believe it would be best that Lyrian and Stanton bury the hatchet publicly.
The agent replied first to Lazarus, then glancing over to me as he spoke.
If what you said about the cavern below is true, we don't have time for division in the ranks.
We don't, I agreed. As it is, we're going to need all of Virtus working on this, and even then I think we're going to be hard-pressed. That giant beast aside, we were all outclassed by even the common creatures that inhabited the grove. It's going to be a long learning curve for all of us down there.
Are we sure we just want to limit this to the guild, Lear?
Freya asked.
That cavern is huge, and even with all of us exploring it, I'm not sure if we have enough people to make a dent in all the creatures down there, at least not quickly.
I was thinking the same thing, I replied hesitantly. But if we tell people about the Twilight Grove, then we're going to have to tell them about the ley line, too. That is a very real risk of blowing up in our faces, badly.
As opposed to the ground literally exploding in their faces if we fail, Constantine chimed in.
I can appreciate your hesitation, Lear, but by the time evening falls, everyone is going to know that we were up to something today. A full wipe by Virtus's elite isn't something that is going to keep quiet for long.
Especially if people see us heading to the ruin on a regular basis, let alone if we wipe again,
Freya added, giving me a worried look.
And don't forget about Ignis. He found the ruin not even 2 hours after we'd uncovered it. It's only a matter of time until he starts telling everyone and they try to enter the ruins themselves. We may have a claim to the place, but unless we're willing to sit and guard it full time, they're going to get in regardless. But if we can be the ones to tell them, we can at least be in control of how the news comes out. Maybe set some ground rules? Short-term hurt feelings aside, it'll be better for us in the long run.
I don't mean to seem like I'm piling on, Aldwyn began hesitantly, his attention focused on me. But I believe that your friends are right in this matter, Lyrian. Keeping news of the ley line was a necessary tactic at the time. All it would have done was incite panic and weaken Aldford before we knew what we were up against. But now, the Bond continued, we have a clear vision of the task before us, and secrecy at this point will only put the town in more jeopardy. If what you have said is true about the creatures in the grove below us, we need all of Aldford's adventurers working together on this, if only to provide you all with some assistance, so Virtus isn't shouldering this alone.
Doing this is going to disrupt everything in Aldford, I said, feeling the weight of my friend's advice land on my shoulders. We need to be ready to handle that.
You will have my full support in whatever you need, Lyrian, Aldwyn replied. If anyone asks, I will stand behind our decision to keep the information privileged.
And so will we, Stanton added, Veronia nodding her head in agreement, though I expect our words not to carry as far as Frederick's will.
It will at least provide a united front, Freya said, which,
A knock on the door caused everyone to turn around as Sierra poked her head into the room.
"Hey," she said in an uneasy voice. "There are a bunch of adventurers that have been showing up downstairs over the last few minutes, and they're all talking about the ruin. Some of them are even making plans to check it out."
"How did they even—"
I started to say before the realization hit me.
"Ignis! Damn, that man is fast!"
"I saw him downstairs," Sierra confirmed. "Right now everyone seems to be excited by the news that there's something so close to explore, but that can turn quickly."
"He must have gone to spread the word right away," Constantine commented angrily. "He's probably expecting us to either quash it and look like assholes, or give in and let everyone in the dungeon."
"Including himself, by extension," Lazarus stated acidly. "Underhanded, but damned if it doesn't put you guys in a hard spot."
"You've mentioned this man twice now. He's an adventurer?"
Veronia asked, looking at us for confirmation. "He is," I stated, reaching up to rub my forehead at this newest development. It wasn't enough for us to have a nearly impossible task in fighting our way through the grove and repairing the ley line, but that we also had to do it while dealing with greedy players, too. He's angry about how much influence Virtus has around here and doesn't trust us.
"He must be a new arrival, then,"
Alduin stated, an angry expression crossing his face.
"Else he would know that influence was justly earned."
"That doesn't matter right now,"
Freya said bitterly as she pushed herself up and out of her seat.
"Ignis has forced our hand on this, and we need to make a statement about the ruins before anyone leaves."
"Yeah, the genie is definitely out of the bottle now,"
I grumbled, following Freya's lead and standing up from the table, hearing everyone else rise behind me.
"I really hoped we'd have more time to get ready for this."
"Ask me for anything but time," Lazarus quoted as we all got up and started to move, leaving the meeting room and following Sierra back down into the common area,
the excited voices of the adventurers below filtering up the stairs.
"Damn, Sierra wasn't kidding," I thought as I looked out towards all the people that had answered Ignis's call. Seeing that several dozen adventurers had managed to pack themselves into the town hall and were all in the process of forming their groups and preparing themselves to head out for the day.
"Damn! That's a lot of them,"
Constantine whispered from behind me.
"This has to be most of the adventurers in town."
"It's barely after 9, I commented, glancing over all the excited faces in the room and wondering what exactly I was going to say to them.
"Only the early risers have left for the day already. Most of the other adventurers are just getting up."
"Saves us the trouble of having to tell them more than once, then,"
Freya said, her eyes scanning the crowd, likely for Ignis and the other adventurers that we saw with him.
"How do you want to approach this, Lear?"
"Directly and with the facts is probably our best bet. There's no sense in hiding any more than we have to," I replied, feeling my heart flutter as my nerves warred with the weight of the death sickness still afflicting me. I was thinking to address them from right under the Webwood Queen's skull, with you and Alduin standing beside me.
"A potent statement,"
Stanton said with approval in his voice.
"It will remind them of what Virtus is capable of."
"And show them that you have my full support,"
Alduin added. "Hopefully that'll be enough," I said, exhaling slowly in an attempt to control my wildly beating heart. "Let's get this over with." Crossing the room, Freya, Alduin, and I made our way through the crowd of adventurers until we reached the large fireplace that dominated the center wall of the hall, with a Webwood Queen's skull hanging over it. Sparing only a brief glance up at the trophy, I mustered my courage and then climbed on top of a nearby long table, where I was able to get a perfect view of the adventurers in the hall, and where the adventurers would be able to get a perfect view of me.
"This is just marginally less stressful than seeing that raid boss come out of the woods," I thought nervously, as I realized that this would be the largest crowd I'd ever spoken to. Sure, I'd made speeches before, but this was by far going to be the largest, and I didn't exactly have good news to share.
"Just take it one step at a time, Mark, and let them know what the score is. You've done this before. There's nothing to worry about." Taking in a deep breath, I tried to hold on to my mental pep talk as I raised my hand high into the air and conjured a bright orb of light. Almost immediately, everyone's eyes glanced over in my direction, curious to see what was going on, the voices gradually dying out as they recognized who I was. Holding my other hand high in the air, I signaled for silence, waiting patiently until I was confident I had everyone's attention.
Good morning, I called out, unable to think of any other better way to start my speech off. I understand that there have been rumors of a discovery floating around Aldford today, and I wanted to take this opportunity to address them. I paused for a moment, hearing several excited whispers echo up from the crowd in anticipation of what I was going to say. The first thing that I wanted to announce is that those rumors are true, I stated in a clear and loud tone. An intact Nefarian ruin has indeed been discovered a short distance away from Aldford, and a cheer from the crowd interrupted me as several of the adventurers shouted in celebration, causing me to hold out my hands once more and signal for silence. And, I repeated, once the noise had died down enough for me to continue. As you may have also heard, Virtus did run into something that wiped out two of our parties. All lingering traces of chatter died in the room at my statement, with a range of emotions crossing the faces of the adventurers before me. Gazing out into the crowd as my words sank in, I saw expressions of concern, excitement, and in a handful of cases, fear looking back at me, everyone eager to hear what more I had to say. But it isn't what killed us that I'm here to warn you about, I stated, choosing my next words carefully. I'm here to warn you about an even greater threat that has been lurking beneath Aldford, one that has the potential to erase all that we've worked so hard to build, and one that Virtus is no longer capable of managing on its own. I felt the atmosphere in the room grow heavy with my last statement, all excitement of the new ruin suddenly vanishing as if it had never been. Here goes nothing, I thought, chancing a sidelong glance at Freya, who had climbed the table with me and was standing on my right. Sensing my stare, I saw her give me a reassuring nod out of the corner of my eye, giving me the confidence to voice my next words. Approximately 2 weeks ago, Virtus detected something strange in the ley line that runs under Aldford, I announced, hearing murmurs fill the hall the second that I mentioned the River of Magic. After taking a closer look at it and bringing in the expertise of the Iberian Mages Guild members, we discovered that a portion of the ley line has ruptured, and that ether was leaking from it, pooling somewhere far beneath us. It was determined that unless this rupture were somehow repaired, the ether leaking from the ley line would eventually reach a critical mass and detonate itself, catastrophically destroying everything in this region, Aldford included. I waited for a moment to let my words sink in, watching shock and surprise play across the adventurers' faces. Based on the severity of this situation and the panic that it could bring, we collectively decided that it would be best to keep this news to ourselves until...
Until you had no other choice?
Ignis's familiar voice shouted out.
The only reason why you're telling us this now is because until we had more information.
I countered loudly, seeing several adventurers all shifting away from a spot, revealing where Ignis had hidden himself in the crowd, the elf glaring straight up at me with an angry expression.
Given the lack of information that we were working with, we did not want to cause a panic in the town if we could avoid it.
A measure that I highly endorsed,
Alduin added from his place on my left.
Aldford has seen its share of trials of late, and more than anything I wanted to preserve a sense of normalcy while we investigated this threat to the town.
Don't give us that shit!
Ignis retorted hotly, several voices from the crowd shouting out in sympathy.
You would have kept this a secret forever if it wasn't for me finding the damn ruin myself.
Oi! Shut up, you twit!
A loud voice barked out from amid the adventurers, which immediately prompted more shuffling as everyone took a step away from the new speaker, revealing an armored dwarf I'd never seen before walking towards Ignis.
Lyrian and his group have done far too much for us for you to be talking smack about his choices of how to run this town. If it weren't for them saving our asses from them bandits, a good lot of us would be starting fresh back from Iberia. But not only that, they've been working like fiends to ensure that we're housed and fed.
A loud chorus of agreement rang up at the dwarf's statement, causing Ignis to shrink backward a step as the man closed in on him.
You know damn well that cowardly folk like you would have bailed the moment the trouble reared its ugly head.
The dwarf continued, taking several more threatening steps towards Ignis, who finally managed to muster up his courage.
How dare you call me a coward? He spat at the dwarf. I'm the one who brought all of this to light. You would have never even known about this if it weren't for me.
All you're doing, boy, is stirring an overboiling pot that Virtus is desperately trying to cool.
The dwarf answered, taking another step towards Ignis, this time with his hands raised before him.
And if you keep spewing your filth, I swear I'm gonna pop you in the gob hard enough that you'll be picking your teeth out from your pod. There will be no violence here.
Dire's voice rang out as he suddenly appeared between the dwarf and Ignis, having effortlessly made his way through the crowd.
If you must settle anything, it'll be through a sanctioned duel outside the town hall.
Something that I would do gladly, Justicar,
the dwarf shouted in response to the cheers of several adventurers in the crowd.
Looks like we have more support than we thought,
Freya commented quietly as the cheers devolved into shouting and adventurers began to form up behind either Ignis or the dwarf.
Damn, this is exactly what I was afraid of happening, I replied, gritting my teeth as the dwarf and Ignis continued to shout at one another.
Pitching my voice over the crowd, I called out as loud as I could manage,
Enough!
With my shout cutting through the din and Dire's imposing presence, the voices in the hall gradually quieted, everyone's attention shifting away from the two adventurers and back onto me.
As I was saying,
I said after the volume had died down to a manageable level, we were waiting until we had more information before making a public statement about the ley line, and as of a few moments ago, we finally have something to share. I paused once again for a moment, waiting for the lingering voices to completely die down. During our exploration of the Nefarian ruins, we found a route that led deep underground, going as far to reach a massive cavern set directly under Aldford, I announced in as clear a voice as I could manage. And in that cavern, we discovered an underground grove like none seen before, one filled to the brim with hordes of savage creatures, along with magical plants and countless untouched resources. And, of course, the ley line rupture. With my last words, excited murmurs broke out from the adventurers, the argument just seconds earlier completely overshadowed by the promise of a rich and untouched area to explore.
But this place, the Twilight Grove, is not for the faint of heart, I warned, hoping to temper everyone's expectations. It is a place of extreme danger that only the strongest adventurers and guilds in Aldford are going to be able to survive in, and only if they all work together. As such, I am issuing a call to arms to all the adventurers here before me, I announced, looking out into the crowd and meeting as many eyes as I could manage. It will not be an easy task by any means, but we need your help in taming this new region and in finding a way to repair the ley line before it can destroy what we've worked so hard to build. Wrapping up my speech, I spread my hands wide and hoped that my words would be enough to inspire everyone and keep the cracks that had just shown themselves under control. So, now I ask, who among you is ready to stand up and help save Aldford?
Chapter 42. Tuesday, March 26th, 2047, 8:45 p.m. The Twilight Grove. With a sharp grunt of exertion, I thrust Splinter's point into the beast's armpit, forcing it through the tough muscle until the hilt came to a stop against flesh. Within a heartbeat of the blow landing, a pained roar filled the air around me, prompting me to duck under a razor-sharp set of claws, temporarily letting go of my sword. Feeling the breeze of the arm sail over my head, I used the opportunity to conjure a burning dagger in my hand, and in one smooth motion plunged it into the creature's far knee, the thick gray skin easily parting under the knife's searing edge. The smell of burning flesh filled my nose as I continued to move. The dagger, its job done, turned to ash in my grasp. A step took me past the now falling beast, its large muscular form twisting awkwardly as the momentum from its earlier attack, combined with its now crippled knee, sent it to the ground in a heap, right into Amaranth's waiting jaws. The gorilla-like creature barely had time to complete its fall to the ground before the azure-furred puma managed to sink his teeth into its throat and tear out a large chunk of flesh, turning its whining cry into a pitiful gurgle. Time to end this, I thought, reaching out towards Splinter's hilt, protruding from the beast's side and grasping it tightly. With a sharp yank, I pulled the blade free of the gray-skinned creature's thrashing body and unceremoniously thrust it into the back of its head, immediately seeing a pair of notifications appear in my combat log. You have slain a Twilight Grove troglodyte. You have gained party experience.
Give me your magic,
Amaranth's voice brought me back into the moment, the cat already leaping away from the body of the fallen troglodyte towards where more of its comrades were fighting.
There are more beasts still standing.
With barely a second thought, I mentally channeled Blinkstep in Amaranth's direction, the cat vanishing from sight the moment that I made the spell available to him and reappearing mid-leap just inches behind another troglodyte. Moving to follow my familiar, I leaped over the rapidly dissipating body of the creature that we had just killed and triggered my own Blinkstep, my world splintering into a blur of colors as I shifted places. Reappearing, just as Amaranth hamstrung a new troglodyte, I saw the large creature fall to one knee with a roar, its sudden movement giving me a perfect view of both Sawyer and Sierra over its shoulder as the pair fought back to back against two more of the beasts that had managed to circle them.
"Nice of you to finally join the party, Lear!"
Sierra called out, catching sight of me out of the corner of her eye as she dodged under one pair of troglodyte's claws while catching the second on one of the twin swords in her hands, leaving the other free for her to send a short stab into the beast's chest.
"I decided to take the scenic route,"
I answered, moving forward to aid Amaranth, seeing him leap backward from a swipe of the troglodyte's claw as it spun around, then dart forward to deliver a slash of his own along its side. Leading with Splinter, I rushed towards the creature's flank. I took advantage of its awkward positioning and carved a line into its shoulder, prompting a pained howl from the unexpected attack. Dragging my blade across the troglodyte's back, I felt a cool wave of energy travel through Splinter and up my arm as I absorbed the few dregs of mana its kind usually had, the sensation lasting barely longer than a couple seconds before fading. Quivering under my draining touch, I heard a confused roar escape from the beast's throat as it tried to shrink away from my blade, giving Amaranth the opportunity to land another swipe, this one landing with enough force for bones to audibly crack and send it falling towards the ground, which, much like its companion a few seconds earlier, heralded the end for the poor creature as Splinter's edge connected with the troglodyte's neck and continued straight through it until it buried itself in the soft dirt underneath. We've come a long way since the first day here. I couldn't help but think as I watched the creature's head fall away from its body, rolling limply along the ground as a dark gray ichor began to pour forth from its severed neck. Looking up from the fallen beast, I returned my attention to both Sawyer and Sierra, the pair gradually wearing down their two troglodytes now that they didn't have to worry about the third one. These things used to take three of us to take one down. Now we can manage by ourselves, or nearly effortlessly in pairs.
"Help Sawyer, I'll help Sierra,"
I told Amaranth as I flicked the dark blood from Splinter's edge and rushed towards the troglodyte's flank, charging the blade with a shocking touch.
"Coming in high!"
I called out to Sierra as I approached the wounded troglodyte from the side, seeing her slash one of her blades across the creature's stomach and then pivot to one side, causing it to reflexively shift its head to follow, giving me the perfect shot at the beast's head. Swinging a crackling splinter through the air, I chopped the blade into the side of the troglodyte's skull and felt a shuddering crunch as the sword bit deep into the skull, embedding itself in the bone. Discharging itself on contact, I then felt the electricity stored in my blade leap forward as it coursed through the creature's head, scrambling all thought stored within. "Assuming these trogs are even capable of thought," I added dryly as I yanked on Splinter's hilt, pulling the now spasming creature's head backward in the process and exposing its throat towards Sierra, who promptly buried one of her swords into it. A sharp kick to the back of its leg a second later then brought the gurgling troglodyte down to its knees, where Sierra's other blade quickly found its eye and sent it along to join the rest of its companions. Placing my foot on the back of the dead troglodyte's back, I pushed against the body, needing the leverage to dislodge my blade, which was still firmly embedded into its skull. While pulling the blade free, I cast a quick look around the battlefield, catching sight of both Amaranth and Sawyer putting an end to their troglodyte. I then continued onwards to check the rest of the group, having lost track of them in the melee. Seems like everyone made it without too many problems, I noted to myself several seconds later, seeing Drace and Freya step out from the thick jungle nearby, and sensing that Constantine, Halcyon, and Caius were gradually approaching us.
"Everyone doing okay?"
Drace asked as he caught sight of us all, his voice breaking the relative silence that had fallen over our patch of the jungle now that the troglodytes were dead.
"No problems here," Sawyer announced from behind me. "I think we're finally getting the hang of this. A hell of a lot better than our first day down here."
"God, don't remind me about that," Sierra added in a pained tone as she exhaled sharply. "Just thinking about that day gives me death sickness."
"We had a lot to learn,"
Freya replied dryly, her eyes losing focus as she looked at something in her vision.
How's everyone doing? Just a couple thousand experience points shy of level 18.
Roughly the same here,
Sawyer answered, with both Drace and Sierra also echoing similar values.
I still have a fair bit to go, I replied, bringing up my character sheet and glancing over all the changes that had taken place over the last few days. Lyrian Rastler, level 17 Spellsword, human male, Iberian. Statistics, HP 979 out of 979. Stamina, 890 out of 890. Mana, 1040 out of 1040. Experience to next level, 15,734 out of 36,400. Attributes, strength, 57 out of 77, agility, 57 out of 78, constitution, 54 out of 55, intelligence, 60, willpower, 22.
Still leveling your leadership skills?
Freya asked, prompting me to shift my focus away from the sheet.
You've been at that for a while now.
I just need one more point, I said, giving the woman a nod before returning my attention back to the sheet and scrolling down towards the leadership section, checking to see what my progress was. I've managed to boost the other skills high enough to unlock the next leadership tier, which costs 3 points, and
Oh, wait! I gained a point during that battle! Hang on a second!
Feeling a surge of excitement surge through me, I spent my newly gained leadership skill point, having spent the last few days in this cavern with 60% of my experience gain allocated into the leadership tree. Originally, my plan had been to continue to develop the 3 regeneration skills that I'd already had focused on, and help decrease our downtime between fights. But when I had spent my 30th leadership skill point, a new skill became available to me, which, given our experience with the beast, practically begged me to invest the time in earning it. Now let's see what else I've unlocked, I thought eagerly, as I confirmed my choice and felt an unexpected wave of confidence surge through me as a list of notifications appeared in my vision, along with a newly updated leadership skill tree. You have unlocked a new leadership skill. Form Raid Group. You now have access to Tier 2 Leadership Skills. Leadership Skills. Increased Health Regeneration. Increased amount of health regenerated by 8, 8 out of 10. Increased Mana Regeneration. Increased amount of mana regenerated by 8, 8 out of 10. Increased Stamina Regeneration. Increased amount of stamina regenerated by 8, 8 out of 10. Increased Movement. Increased Mounted and Unmounted Speed by 6%, 6 out of 10. Improved Leadership 1, grants the ability to form a raid group and unlocks further leadership development, 1 out of 1. Improved Health, increased total health by 1%, 0 out of 5. Improved Mana, increased total mana by 1%, 0 out of 5. Improved Stamina, increased total stamina by 1%, 0 out of 5.
Oh, damn!
I exclaimed excitedly as I finished reading over my new skill list, unable to keep myself from grinning as I read it over.
This was definitely worth it.
What was worth it?
Constantine asked as he and the other two casters finally emerged from the forest and rejoined us, their eyes scanning the area cautiously.
You guys find some loot?
No, I replied, my eyes still focused on the text hanging in my vision.
I finally earned that last leadership point I needed to unlock the next skill tier.
Oh.
The rogue replied, his voice sounding slightly disappointed that my excitement didn't correspond to material wealth.
That's just as great, I guess.
What skills did you get?
Freya asked curiously, ignoring Constantine's lack of excitement. She had also unlocked the leadership skill tree, but hadn't chosen to progress as far down it as I had just yet.
Anything good?
Well, I can form raid groups now, for one thing, so that'll be useful for later, I announced, watching everyone's face shift as they were reminded of my initial motivation to unlock the skill. But I also unlocked these 3 other skills that'll scale pretty well with time. I then read out the new leadership skills to the party, watching their faces light up at the news. Each of them takes 3 skill points per level right now, and I'm sure that'll only increase, but that's a pretty potent buff for just forming a party.
I'll say,
Freya replied with envy in her voice,
especially once you've got them all capped out.
No one will begrudge an extra bit of health or mana. It could end up making all the difference.
Damn right. I'll never turn down more hit points, Trace agreed. Because when it turns out you need more hit points, you really need more hit points.
I hear you there, I said, all the close calls and fights over the last few days floating through my mind. But given that a leadership skill point is costing me 3,500 experience points now, I think I'm going to switch back to full leveling for a bit, earning just a 1% boost to a stat compared against reaching level 18 or higher just doesn't seem worth it yet. Being able to form a raid group was the thing I wanted the most at the moment.
Makes sense.
Freya began to agree before Halcyon's somewhat shrill voice cut her off.
I'm sorry, Lyrian, I think you're gonna have to repeat all of that for us, he said, glancing nervously around the party. Because I know that I can't be the only one whose brain started going, the moment that you suggested we'd be forming a raid group. You still seriously want to go after the beast?
I don't see any other option, Hal, I replied firmly despite sharing his reservations. That thing has been effortlessly wiping out two or three parties a day. As soon as we get a decent enough core of higher levels, we're going to have to take a shot at it.
That, and the fact that it's a raid boss, Hal,
Constantine added in a passionate voice.
It's our duty as adventurers to put our immortal lives on the line, to find and slay this magnificent beast before it can wreak havoc amongst the NPCs in the region.
First of all, that thing is too big to fit through the tunnel entrance,
Halcyon breathed.
So it's not threatening any NPCs at all. If we leave it in here, it'll never escape. Second?
Jeez, work with me here,
the rogue interrupted, resuming his normal tone and glaring at the mage.
We want to kill the thing because it probably drops awesome loot, and if we don't do it, another group might pull it off. Not to mention, a fight with that raid boss is probably worth half a mil to us in feed value alone. Maybe more if we're the ones to take it down.
Shit, I didn't even consider that, I thought, as the revelation hit both the rest of the group and me with equal intensity, everyone glancing at one another with wide eyes.
Holy shit,
Sawyer whispered, the first to break the shocked silence.
You guys are that popular? I mean, I had an idea, but...
We're in the top 1,000. I admitted to Sawyer, still a bit stunned by Constantine's logic.
Damn,
the red-armored man whispered with awe, his eyes brightening as he looked over at me.
Virtus need any more warriors, by chance? Lazarus may be a good buddy, but he sure as hell doesn't pay in the 6-figure range, or the 1-figure range, now that I think about it.
I'll keep you in mind, I replied, flashing a smile at the man before Halcyon called out again.
Lear, he stated in a serious voice.
After some serious consideration, I've changed my mind. We need to turn that creature into sausage as soon and in as awesome a manner possible.
I thought that'd bring you around to my line of thinking,
Constantine said with a wide smile breaking out on his face.
Oh, I'm thinking all right, the mage replied. Mostly on how I'm gonna stay the hell away from the thing while you all kill it. Being eaten by that thing once in my life is more than enough for me.
I think we're all...
I started to reply to the mage, only to have a massive roar echo out from somewhere distant in the jungle, filling all of us with a deep existential dread as the very creature we were talking about made itself known.
Another one bites the dust.
Sierra said nervously, her eyes focused towards the shadow-filled canopy.
What's that, the 6th today?
At least, I replied with a sigh, the levity of our earlier conversation having vanished. The beast's roar had become an almost staple noise in the Twilight Grove over the last few days, ringing out whenever the creature managed to claim a new victim, or more likely a group of victims. A noise that had been growing only more frequent with each day that passed. That sounded far enough away, I said, motioning for everyone to resume the trail that we had been following through the jungle. But we should probably get moving just in case. If we can't find that stone soon, we'll have to turn back for the night.
Based on what that other group told us, we should be getting close,
Sierra assured me as she, Amaranth, and I took point, resuming our track. Assuming we haven't accidentally intersected another group's path, but I doubt that's the case. It's impossible to get through this place without leaving a trail exactly where you've gone. And I haven't noticed any other trails.
Me either, I replied,
glancing out at the ragged path of broken plants and torn vines that signaled that a group of adventurers had recently passed through here. The jungle was simply too thick for anyone except the most patient to pass through without leaving some sort of evidence of where they had gone. Pushing onwards, I kept my eyes scanning the foliage carefully as we moved, watching for any sign of creatures lurking in wait, while silently wondering if the group had actually found a second runestone, which is what we'd begun calling the large glowing rock that we'd discovered during our first day in the grove. Which already seems like a lifetime ago, I thought, feeling the familiar weight of mental fatigue and exhaustion return as the excitement of battle faded. Ever since I had issued the call to arms and led Aldford's adventurers down into the Twilight Grove, the days had blurred themselves into a veritable storm of blood and death as we all worked to tame the underground jungle. The first day with all of Aldford's adventurers entering the grove had been sheer chaos. Despite all our warnings not to take the creatures lightly, the majority of the groups going into the cavern had done just that, treating the grove as if it were just another area filled with monsters. And consequently, they paid the price for it. Nearly three-quarters of all the adventurers that came down with us on that first day were torn to shreds by the jungle creatures, with a substantial number of them practically begging us, or other well-organized guilds, to physically escort them to their numerous soul fragments by the time the evening fell. Many of them then chose not to return to the grove, in favor of spending more time leveling in the safer areas above ground before making a second attempt at the jungle. But those who learned from their early mistakes, or have been smart enough to heed our warning in the first place, found themselves in a place where they could hone their skills against a virtually endless horde of creatures. Or, as gamers would more aptly describe it, grind. Given the rather substantial level difference between the average Aldford adventurer and the majority of the creatures in the grove, gaining levels was by far the most important thing that anyone could do in the jungle, and Virtus was no exception. We had recalled every single member of the guild and outfitted them with the best armor and weapons that we had available, then set out en masse into the cavern, starting the process in bridging the level gap between us and the creatures that inhabited the Twilight Grove. There were, of course, missteps and deaths at first, as we were forced to develop tactics that worked against the creatures and which people fought best together. But as the days progressed, we slowly made headway against the seemingly endless array of monsters that crawled amongst the strange alien plants that made up the jungle. We were now able to carve our way through the weaker hordes that would have once stopped us cold. All part of the cycle, I thought dryly, as I pushed a large fern-like plant out of my face and continued to follow the trail. Find a new area full of tough monsters, kill them until you outlevel them, then go searching for newer and tougher monsters. Though in our case, finding tougher creatures means working our way closer to the ley line. After a few days of leveling in the Twilight Grove, we had all noticed that the creatures in the place progressively increased in level the further that one delved into it. Lower levels, for the area at least, seemed to be found around the edges of the massive jungle, their levels ranging from level 15 to 17, and gradually increasing to 18 and 19 as one pushed into the heart of the grove. Anything past that point, however, was still a mystery, with no adventure or group having managed to make it any deeper without being fatally swarmed by the local fauna or attracting the attention of the beast. It's only a matter of time, I thought optimistically, as I considered just how far we'd come in the last few days. Just a few more days leveling, then we should have enough people leveled high enough to go hunting for that damn creature. Once it's out of the way, we can see about pushing our way towards the ley line.
"Is that the stone we were looking for?"
Amaranth's mental voice broke through my introspective thoughts, causing me to focus on our surroundings once more. I stalled, seeing the outlines of a large shadow loom distantly along the trail. "Let me see." Bracing myself for the shock, I quickly toggled my true sight while staring in the direction of the shadow, the darkness at the edges of our light vanishing into a blinding spray of azure energy before vanishing, leaving me clutching at my eyes as faint afterimages swam across my vision.
"Yep,"
I announced, recalling the pillar of light that was exactly where the shadow had stood. "That's definitely another runestone."
"Great,"
Sierra commented excitedly from beside me. "So, what does that mean?" "I haven't the faintest idea," I replied as the stone came into view in the orbs of light that were illuminating our path. Taking a moment to inspect the area,
I noticed that like the first runestone we'd found several days earlier, this one was also deeply embedded in the ground, with much of the vegetation around it having been trampled, likely from the other party that had found it first. We haven't even made sense of the first one we found, let alone this one. Donovan and the others haven't had any insight? Sierra asked as the rest of the group joined us and we all walked around to the smooth side of the runestone.
Nothing useful,
Halcyon supplied for me, having been working with the four mages with whatever little spare time he had.
After watching the runes play through a few cycles on the stone, Lear and I decided to take some sketches to show them, and so far we all agree that it's some sort of spell notation, but we haven't been able to figure out anything more than that.
Probably because we don't have enough context of the overall spell, I said, motioning towards the stone. We thought that the runestone might have been part of something bigger before, and this is proof of it.
Could be,
Caius agreed.
But that only leads to question how many runestones there are, or if they're all even intact.
We can ask around and see if anyone else has found any, now that we know for sure there's more than one, Sierra said thoughtfully.
Or make a formal announcement to all the adventurers that we're looking for them. Pretty much everyone's found the first stone already, so it's not a secret by any stretch.
My bet is if there are any others that they're even further into the jungle, Constantine said. This one here is about as deep into the grove as any of us have traveled so far. Any further than this, and we're likely to start running into those level 19 praying mantis-looking things that Lazarus said wiped out his group last night.
I think you're right, I told the rogue, while simultaneously shuddering at the memory of the half-giant's description of the creatures.
So, what's the plan now, Lear?
Drace asked after we all shared a sympathetic wince.
We found the stone, but I'm not keen on hanging around here any longer than we have to.
We wait until it lights up, I said, sheathing Splinter and then reaching into my inventory to pull out a stick of charcoal, parchment, and a flat sheet of metal, seeing Halcyon do the same out of the corner of my eye. And then we sketch it, too. It's not like we can take it with us. Drace paused to look up at the stone, before nodding in agreement.
No, definitely not through a jungle like this.
Do you really think you guys will be able to figure something out with this? Constantine asked as I found myself a place to sit in front of the runestone, both Amaranth and Halcyon moving to take a seat on each side of me. I mean, the quest we have for the ley line didn't even react to us finding the stones.
I really don't know, Constantine, I admitted with a shrug as I readied myself. But these stones have to be important somehow, otherwise they wouldn't have survived the blast that formed this place. As if it had been listening to my words, the runestone chose that moment to flare into life, familiar runes and magical script appearing on its smooth face and beginning to crawl across its surface. Sitting up straight, I flattened the parchment onto the metal sheet before me, while watching the shifting lines flow across the rock, attempting to commit each and every piece of it to memory. I stared at the runestone without moving, letting the entire sequence play out on its surface until it finally faded away. It was only then that I looked down at the parchment before me and lifted the charcoal stick in my hand, placing it on the page carefully, and began to draw. Chapter 43
Finally!
Constantine exclaimed as we passed through the long tunnel separating the Twilight Grove and the massive chamber that we had fought the Sentinel in, the sound of friendly voices and even laughter greeting our ears.
Home, albeit temporary, home at last.
What a long day,
Drace agreed, the half-giant's tone carrying a heavy note of exhaustion.
I can't wait to sleep. Hell, I might just log off and crash in my real bed tonight.
That's not a bad idea, I told the man, looking at the sprawling camp that had practically willed itself into existence the moment that adventurers realized that after a long day of hunting in the grove, that they still had to make the trek back up through the ruin and then to Aldford. I had no clue who first decided to throw their bedroll down on the ground in the chamber and simply fall asleep, but most of the adventurers afterward had considered it to be a fantastic idea, and joined in until nearly everyone exploring the grove was spending their nights in the relatively safe area. After that, it wasn't long until a handful of them decided to clean up the rather battle-scarred chamber, and even shorter after that, before several other enterprising adventurers realized that there was coin to be made by providing services to those willing to brave the grove. And so Camp Sentinel was born. In the span of 3 days, the chamber that we had been caught fighting for our lives in against the Nefarian golem had been transformed into a sort of home away from home, filled with clusters of roughly made chairs and tables where weary adventurers could rest in between their expeditions into the Twilight Grove. Yet the addition of new furniture wasn't what made the place feel homey. It was everything else that followed it. With the adventurers choosing to spend their downtime in a single spot, it was only a matter of time before the chefs among their ranks began to ply their trade and began turning the creatures and plants of the grove into strange and exotic dishes, removing the one major need any of them had to return to the surface. Shortly after the chefs appeared, so did the merchants, each of them eager to lighten overburdened adventurers of their spoils gained from hunting in exchange for piles of coin. Then, eventually following the merchants, came Shelia and Jenkins, the pair seizing on the opportunity to both cater to those who needed healing and those who found their equipment in dire need of repair, if not replacement. "Every time I look at this place, it seems that there's something new sprouting up," I commented to Freya, motioning towards a group of adventurers that were setting up a large burlap tent in one corner of the chamber, in an attempt to carve out some privacy for themselves.
"Never underestimate the power of an inconvenienced adventurer," she replied tiredly, following my hand towards the group's efforts. "They'll move heaven and earth until they can be lazy again."
"That sounds about right," I said with a chuckle, while glancing back at the group and seeing that they had all dispersed, some heading towards the tables where other members of Virtu sat, others heading straight towards their bedrolls before collapsing into them. "Are you going to bed or staying up a bit longer?"
"Bed, definitely," Freya replied, covering a yawn as she shook her head. "I don't know how you manage on 4 hours of sleep a night, but I can't do it, at least not after a day like today."
"I know what you mean," I said, despite feeling the exhaustion that only an entire day of fighting could bring. "But I shouldn't be too long. I just want to check on the camp, then take the new runestone sketches to the mages and see if we can make sense of them. I'll sleep better knowing that everything here is going okay."
"I'll save your bedroll, then," Freya told me with a wave, her eyes already partially glazed over as she turned to walk towards the section of the chamber that Virtus had staked out, leaning heavily on her spear as she moved. "Good night, Lear."
"Good night, Amaranth."
"Good night, Freya," I called back, my familiar also croaking in acknowledgement as the blonde warrior departed.
"Perhaps we can find some food, too?"
Amaranth asked a heartbeat afterward, his hopeful eyes shifting up to look at me.
"The meat from those beasts, the troglodytes, tasted far too foul to be eaten, and I find myself starving."
"Ah, I'm sorry, Amaranth," I replied to the cat, suddenly realizing that aside from a single unlucky gremlin in the morning, I hadn't seen him eat or drink anything at all today. Given my rather unique condition of no longer needing to eat, I wasn't in the habit of carrying any food with me, leaving me with nothing to offer the cat.
"I didn't even think. Let's find you something right now."
Moving deeper into the camp, the two of us made a beeline towards a collection of tables that served as a makeshift kitchen catering to the hordes of the adventurers, while also making a brisk business buying meat and herbs recovered from the creatures of the grove. Angling our approach towards a tall, dark-furred Tulshar that was busily butchering various meats, I flagged the man down and pointed towards a table with a pile of uncut meat.
"Hey, is any of this meat for sale?"
I asked, seeing his eyes widen in recognition as he turned to look towards me, still holding his bloody knife in his hand.
"Hmm?"
He grunted in confusion before following my hand towards the table.
Well, not until it's cooked. If you want a meal, you can... Oh!
Halfway through his sentence, Amaranth decided to make his presence known and placed both of his paws on the heavily laden table as he lifted himself up off the ground, his nose twitching as he began to sniff at the meat.
"It's not for me,"
I told the understandably shocked butcher as the table groaned ominously under Amaranth's weight. "I'm just looking for something for my familiar."
"I can see that,"
he said, managing to recover from the surprise.
What does he want?"
"This piece,"
Amaranth replied, licking a massive flank that must have once belonged to a truly large grove creature, not waiting for me to pass the question along to him.
"Possibly more, if I'm still hungry."
"We'll start with that slab that he just licked," I told the man, seeing him wince as Amaranth then bit into the meat that he had marked and lifted it off the table without disturbing any of the other cuts piled around it.
How much for that piece? And let's say another cut, roughly at size two. The Tulshar stalled as the sounds of amaranth tearing into his meal reached our ears.
3 silver should cover it. Maybe just have him come back when he's ready for seconds?
Works for me, I replied, taking out my pouch to pay the man, who accepted my coin with a numb expression, his attention focused in the direction of amaranth's eating. You can take one more thing off the table when you're done with that piece, I told the cat as I turned away from the tables. I'm going to check on Sheila and the others to see how their day went. Receiving a mental grunt in response from my familiar as he continued to messily feast on his meal, I left him behind to eat in peace while crossing the length of the camp towards where Sheila and her apprentices had set up shop. After the disaster that was the first day exploring the grove, we realized that we needed to have a medical area to help treat the wounded who managed to make it out of the grove under their own power. I hadn't yet been unfortunate enough to come across any, but there were apparently a number of creatures in the jungle that were capable of inflicting lasting injuries on their victims, be it through some sort of wasting disease, burrowing spines, or a particularly long-lasting venom. None of which faded with the regular regeneration that we adventurers enjoyed. Instead, anyone so afflicted needed to be treated either magically or cured by alchemical means, which many of the adventurers simply didn't have access to. It seemed as with many of the games before it, Ascend Online was no exception to the rule that healers were often few and far between, with many players not gravitating to the support role. Fortunately for us, however, we had Sheila and several other adventurers that she had taken under her wing who were all more than willing to aid those suffering in exchange for a chance to practice their skills.
Thank you so much for your help,
I heard an unfamiliar adventurer say graciously as she stepped out from behind a set of several blinds that marked the healer's area of the camp, designed to give their patients some privacy.
I don't know what I would have done without you.
It's what we're here for,
Sheila replied a moment later, following the woman out from behind the enclosed area.
Do try and take care of yourself, will you? Perhaps avoiding the stinger of whatever beast you came across in the jungle would be a good start.
Believe me,
the woman breathed, letting out a small chuckle before departing.
I'll try. I definitely don't want to go through that again.
Hey, Sheila, I called out as I approached the priestess, seeing her eyes shift off of the adventurer and onto me.
Ah, Lyrian,
she greeted, her eyes dropping down to look over my body as if expecting to see an injury.
Are you just stopping by for a visit, or?
Just a visit, I said quickly, not wanting to worry the woman. We just got back from the grove a few minutes ago, and I just wanted to check in.
That I am glad to hear,
Sheila replied with relief in her voice, before motioning me towards a set of chairs that faced the camp. Was it a busy day today? I asked once the both of us were seated. Any problems?
Not particularly,
Sheila replied after cocking her head in thought for a moment.
The camp is in good spirits overall, though I did have a few unfortunate souls early in the day that I hope have learned to be much warier about what plants they decide to eat. Oh, and another handful that will hopefully take much more care when fighting those quill bears that I've heard about. I must have removed enough of those jagged quills to fashion myself a cloak from them all.
You know, that may not actually be a bad idea, I replied, having only heard stories about the bear-sized porcupines that inhabited a section of the jungle. It would certainly deter anyone from attacking the wearer from behind.
Likely, it would just fill the wearer's backside full of quills once he attempted to sit down with the cloak on,
Sheila said with a chuckle.
But how about your day, Lyrian? Was it a productive day hunting?
It was, I stated, shaking my head at the mental picture the priestess had just painted. We spent the day thinning out the troglodytes on the eastern side of the grove, and eventually got word that a group discovered yet another runestone, so we went to verify that.
And?
Sheila prompted, well aware of the strange Nefarian artifact by reputation, if not by sight. There was indeed a second runestone, I said, then followed it with a shrug a moment afterward. I still have no idea what to make of it, but we took a few more sketches of the thing, and I was going to deliver them to the mages in the upper ruins before turning in for the night. I just wanted to check in on you and Jenkins before I left the camp again.
Well, unfortunately you've just missed him, Sheila replied with a shake of her head. He written a pair of adventures just left for Oldford less than an hour ago. He briefly mentioned something about a group finding a large vein of ore in the grove and needing more tools before taking off.
Someone found metal? I exclaimed in sudden excitement at the news. That's amazing! Did he say what kind it was?
Unfortunately, no,
Sheila answered, not surprised in the slightest at my enthusiasm. Having spent the last few weeks living with Jenkins, she was well aware of the shortages that Aldford faced when it came to the precious substance.
Given our needs, he was understandably excited.
No kidding, I said, nodding along with her assessment, while simultaneously feeling a sense of relief wash over me. A large vein of any type of metal would go a long way to meeting the demands that the rapid construction had placed on Aldford, and perhaps allow us to use some of it for something other than building, especially if we didn't need to use the difficult-to-forge ether-touched iron that we had recovered. That could change everything.
I think those were the exact words that came out of his mouth, too,
Sheila commented with a laugh before her face turned serious.
We'll have to see if the news bears fruit, though. The metal is yet to actually be recovered.
Definitely, I agreed, noticing a staggering adventurer turn around a distant tent and begin to make his way towards us. Oh, looks like you might have another customer coming. Sheila replied, leaning forward in her seat to look past me, then stood up from her seat, sighing softly.
More quills from the looks of it.
Standing up to follow Sheila, I turned to look towards the adventurer, the man having approached close enough for me to identify him as a half-elf, likely either a rogue or a warrior based on what I could see of his armor, where it wasn't completely covered in razor-sharp quills, protruding from nearly every part of his body.
Hey,
the half-elf greeted us with a noticeable quiver in his voice.
So I kind of fucked up.
I think we can see that.
Sheila replied, indicating for the man to step behind one of the blinds.
But don't worry, I'll have you fixed up in no time.
That would be great,
the elf replied, managing half a nod before his face contorted in a wince.
Shit! No!
Did you win? I asked the man as he gingerly turned himself to walk behind the blind that Sheila had pointed to. Turning his head slowly to look towards me, the man flashed a happy smile.
Hell yeah! It was a rare creature, too.
Right on, man, I congratulated, prompting an exasperated sigh from Sheila.
I'll never understand you adventurers, she growled. Anyway, I guess I'll see you later, Lyrian.
Good luck, I replied, waving farewell at the priestess as she and the quill-filled adventurer stepped out of sight behind the blind. I guess I'll need to catch Ritten Jenkins later, then, I thought as I left the medical area behind, hearing a loud yelp of pain echo out from behind me as Sheila began to de-quill her latest patient. With my plans now changed, I retraced my earlier steps across the camp as I made a line towards the passage that would take me to the upper ruins, the same one that Freya and her party had explored when we'd first delved into the dungeon. I'm heading up to see the mages now, I said to Amaranth as I walked, wondering if the cat had managed to finish his meal. Are you coming with me?
Must I?
Amaranth replied, his mental voice sounding tired and disoriented.
I am rather tired and full.
Not at all, I told my familiar, receiving the mental equivalent of a snore as the cat's presence faded away from my mind. I don't blame him for being tired, I thought with a smile. We were out in the jungle for the entire day today, as well as the day before that, and even the day before that, too. And likely for the foreseeable future, I added dryly, feeling my earlier grin fade away as I considered just how much of the cavern was still left for us to explore. Letting my thoughts wander as I walked through the chamber and into the passage that led to the surface, I barely spared a glance at the damaged Nefarian ruins around me, their novelty having somewhat worn off after several trips to the surface and back. Thankfully, I'd been able to convince the Nefarian security system to permanently unlock one of the paths into the ruin, giving everyone an easy way in and out of the place. It also ensured that a portion of the ruin was completely blocked off from the regular adventurers, ensuring that at least some of the Nefarian technology wouldn't be damaged or tampered with. Eventually, my feet carried me to the upper portion of the ruins, and I found myself entering a room bathed in a cool azure light, the familiar sight of an ether crystal hanging in the center of the chamber. Blinking as my eyes adjusted, I spotted both Donovan and Stanton standing on either side of the crystal, with their outstretched hands pointed towards it. But despite their focus, the both of them spotted my presence and lowered their arms, turning their heads towards me. Donovan, Stanton, I greeted the pair as I crossed the room and walked towards them.
Good evening, Lyrian.
Donovan greeted, stretching his arms and shoulders as if he had been holding his pose for a substantial length of time.
How did the hunt go today?
Pretty well, actually, I replied before waving at the ether crystal. What were you guys just up to?
We are trying to measure just how much ether this crystal contains, Stanton said, taking a step around the crystal to better see me.
And? I asked, suddenly curious.
We don't know, Donovan answered with a frustrated sigh. We simply have no comparison to form a rational measurement. The power stored in here beggars anything we've ever seen before by several orders of magnitude.
That much? I asked, looking over at the crystal, then back towards the two mages.
Imagine one only ever having seen water in puddles.